Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is returning from last week. He's an AP who posts under the name of Hit Ace 7. Hit Ace 7, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Richard. It's an honor to be back.
We talked about a back-off story last week. Have you ever been backed off from the Barona?
Yeah, glad you asked. So, yeah, when I started playing, back-off at Barona was one of my first back-offs. And what's really interesting about that back-off story is that at the time when it happened, I remembered that one of my AP heroes is associated with that property. So when the gentleman backed me off, one of the pit bosses there, and then he asked me, is there anything I could do for you? And I'm thinking, oh, is this a trap? Like, what's going on here? And he's like, yeah, would you like a meal? You know, would you like something to drink? And I'm thinking, I mean, I really don't have nothing to lose. I'm not playing rated. So I said, sure, I'll take a meal. And he said, would you mind if I have lunch with you? I said, hey, sure, no problem. So we got to talking, and that's when I kind of took the opportunity to ask him, hey, I think my hero works here. Is Max Rubin here? He's like, yeah, he works here. And he kind of mentioned that the techniques they use to catch card counters, by and large, are things that Max instituted there. And by the way, they're very sharp. So to the card counters listening, Barona will catch you. They'll zap you right away. Right. So anyways, I said, okay, well, now that's great to know that, that he is here and that he has implemented his procedures for you guys to catch card counters. And then, all right. We said goodbye and whatnot. I went to the restroom, and when I got out, lo and behold, guess who's there ready to greet me? The man himself, Max Rubin. So it was really neat to get to meet him. We talked for a little bit. He shared some experiences with me about his times during AP, and he took a picture with me. So that was very nice of him. I have that picture saved. So definitely one for the books. And to this day, I say that's still been one of my most polite, nicest backoffs ever. So I really appreciate that professionalism there.
Yeah, well, You were lucky that he was there that day. He certainly doesn't live there.
Yeah, definitely.
And in the era of COVID, I suspect he's not there at all. Max has significant health problems. I suspect he goes nowhere near a casino these days.
Yep.
Now, you're a married man.
Yes, sir. Happily married.
How does your gambling career go down with your wife?
Well, actually, were you married before you started playing blackjack, or did you meet her after you started playing blackjack?
Well, the interesting thing there, that's a good question, is it's sort of twofold, right? Like, what is my wife's attitude towards me playing, and what is the relationship in my AP career with her in the picture? The very first person that ever told me, hey, check this out, maybe you'll like blackjack, it was her. And that was when we were dating. So that's kind of what got me interested in starting to play blackjack. And every time that this comes up in retrospect, I always tell her, you had no clue what you were doing, and you were trying to teach me how to play blackjack, right? But anyways, that's how I got introduced into the first blackjack table I ever walked up to. We were at State Line because my wife, family, they were involved in a team, in a little league team for her sister that had a fundraiser. And these fundraisers from here, from California, they do a turnaround. Everybody gets in a bus, goes to State Line, they gamble, and they come back. So that's, I accompanied her family in one of those trips, and that's where she introduced me to blackjack. Now, when I started doing AP, card counting, I was already married, and my wife at first was a little bit skeptical, but she was supportive. So her thing was, if there's something that needs to be taken care of at home, or if we need to do something with a family, you know, that takes priority. And I'm absolutely on board with that. So she's on board. She understands. And once the money did start coming in, you know, thank God my losing year didn't happen right away. Otherwise, that would have been a huge red flag for her. But once she did start seeing that there is a way to make money, and she started to have some relationship with the other APs that I know and their wives, then she kind of she got the picture that this is totally legit, and it's something that she knows I enjoy, and it brings in some good side income. So she's on board. And the one thing I would say, whether it's your significant other that you're dating and you guys are seriously dating, or if you're married, if they are not on board with this, in my opinion, there's nothing good that can come out of it. So I really, really believe that.
No, I agree with you 100%. And usually, though, there are two issues for spouses. One is the swings and being worried about losing money. But the other is the time away from home.
Yep.
So, you know, that hasn't been an issue, or does she go with you on your trips, or how is that?
There's times that I actually bring the family to Vegas when I do my Vegas rounds. And, you know, when I do take them, I kind of do go all out and stay at a nice property and have them with me and take that as a vacation. And then I'll play at nights. But she will come sometimes, not most of the time, sometimes. And she's totally okay with that. I have two small kids. My son is 3. My daughter is 6. So they, their version of going to Vegas is being out in the pool and eating nothing but junk food. So they love it too. but yeah, my wife is totally on board. And the times that she can come, she enjoys it. She's not interested in playing herself, though. I've tried to convince her that maybe she could be my gorilla player, or she could mimic what I'm doing so we could have two hands at all times. And she's not interested in that, but she's okay with me doing it.
Did she go with you to South America?
No. Those trips have been solo. Mm.
You mentioned last week that you had a losing year of $20,000.
Yep.
About. Did that put a strain on her acceptance of the game?
No, not at all. Once my wife realizes that, in this case, she realized that AP is a real thing. She knew that it could include, bad swings. And unfortunately, we did experience that there, but she trusts me. So she know that if I'm in it and I say that it's going to be okay, she sort of trusts me with it. And one thing about my wife that I really appreciate is that she's not interrogating me every time I come back from a trip on how much did we make or lose. And if we lost, you know, when are you going to get that back? That's definitely not the attitude she takes, which that's a huge help.
So when I was on a trip, if I called home on Friday night and my wife would say, how are you doing? And I'd say, we're up 20,000. She'd like, come home now.
Come home now.
And if it was Sunday, and she said, how are you doing? And I said, we're stuck 10,000. She'd be like, don't come home.
Nice.
Oh, my experience was different. If I was ahead 10,000, it was come on home. If I was behind 10,000, it was come on home. It was just afraid of the swings.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, the running joke with my wife is that if I'm losing, or if it's a losing trip, and she asks me how it goes, I say, we're about even.
Yeah.
So she knows, she starts laughing. She knows that's key for like, maybe it wasn't a true trip, a good trip.
No.
And there's been times that we're actually even. I'm like, no, I'm actually not kidding. We're about even this time.
When you just said we're about even, do you play with a partner at all? Or do you ever play as part of a team?
No, I've always played solo. But when I talk to my wife about the winnings or losings, I always include her as in like we are.
Because I see. Yeah.
She's part of my team, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Now, last week you told us you started off with playing double deck games at MGM properties here in Vegas. At the time, you pretended to be a spoke very little or no English.
Yep.
Did they ever talk English in front of you, and how did that all end?
Yeah, it was interesting. I guess it would never occur to them that somebody is just pretending not to speak English. I would hear the pit bosses mention when I, you know, if I'm going in a bad streak, one of them said, do you think he's going to run out of money? And the other guy said, well, I mean, he is down like 4K. I mean, maybe he's a short-lived high roller and he's going to run out of money soon. So I thought that was pretty funny. But just a little snarky comments here and there they would make, you know, nothing that I would be offended over. But it's more like if this guy's only knew that I'm actually here playing at an advantage and, you know, the joke's on them.
So the double decks on the Strip in Las Vegas are notoriously sweaty. I mean, people, yep. they sometimes can be card counter traps. Were you able to avoid that, or do you still play them? Or
yeah, so unfortunately, that game for me is long gone because I'm pretty well known in Vegas. And in my estimation, those games have gotten more and more sweaty over the years. But when I play them, I typically would go during the week, during the daytime or the early times of the morning, maybe graveyard, when the minimum was 25, because that was, you know, an amount that I could afford. And I didn't have too much of a big spread because I wanted to play it for a long time rather than slash and burn. And my approach now is just go and burn whatever game is there. That is my approach now. But at the time, I was using an approach of longevity. So I wouldn't spread that much. I would maybe spread, you know, from 25 to 2 by 100 and kind of gauge the heat if there was any, but I lasted, you know, pretty much like about a year with trips there once or twice a month. And I would have some pretty large sessions as far as time. So yeah, I mean, it got me that, and I had a good relationship with the host. And they would give me free rooms and comp food. And again, not always that they offered it, but by me talking to them and, you know, talking my way into it. And I had a pretty good run, I would say. But yeah, that's no longer there. Definitely not now.
And you mentioned that currently now you just play until you get barred. I'm assuming you now play as a refusal?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, a refusal pretty much 100% of the time now. And I don't leave from a casino either until I'm dead tired and I'm going to start making mistakes or until they bar me. So that's basically my approach now. And zero cover, none.
So even
– Well, you zero cover on your play, but you still show up as a as a Mexican singer.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, Bob. What I mean is no cover. I mean, my approach is always – I am going to maximize my EV by playing the game aggressively. And if the cover is going to be there, it's going to come through another means, not by the game.
So you mentioned currently your top bet is 2 hands of 300. So if you finish a shoe with your 2 hands of 300, they shuffle the cards, your next bet is a quarter?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm very shameless that way. And what I want to emphasize to the players out there that are perhaps starting is that even when you hear a report of a region of casinos or a casino being sweaty, you know, that particular day that you show up, you have some intel, use it, but it could be different, right? So that's one thing I've learned. You need to know how to read the pit, right? When you approach, can you tell if the pit boss seems uptight? Are they sort of playing by all the rules? Are they going to be looking at you when you play? Or are they a little bit more lax, right? Are they trying to talk to you? Are they cracking jokes with you? And you kind of get a read over time, right, of whether you're going to be able to burn that place or not, or if they're going to back you off right away. It's just a good mindset to have when you show up.
Now, you are a part-time player.
Yep.
A lot of our listeners want to be full-time players. Do you think there are advantages to being a part-time player that aren't there for being a full-time player?
I would say absolutely. In my case, I do have a full-time gig at an engineering company. So that is my primary means of income. But being an AP part-time really gives me the freedom, first of all, not to depend on that income for my living expenses, but also it gives me time to kind of manage my own hours so I don't have to make quote-unquote payroll from my blackjack career this month. And it really gives me a flexibility that if I were full-time, I wouldn't have. Now, granted, if I was full-time, I would be able to just grind and travel much more. But then again, that comes by to the expense of me not being home like I want to be home. And it's advantage and disadvantage the way you look at it. But being a part-time AP, it's really worked out for me. So for players that are thinking of going full-time AP, right, I would say if you're single and you just get up and go, that's probably much easier than if you're married and have kids and your family depends on you, for their expenses.
Have you found or have you played since the pandemic started? And if so, how are things different for you as a player?
Yes, I have played. I know there's different opinions out there just navigating through the forums, but in my experience, it's actually been very favorable. The fact that we are required to wear masks, that's helped me at some of the local shops where otherwise they would find me out right away. So that's helped in that sense. And then there's less people at the tables, right? Some casinos, I don't know why, but they should open more tables if there's only three to a table. Some of them don't, but some of them do. So there's more tables and there's only three people to a table. And that's basically very favorable for the approach that I use, because I would prefer, by all means, if I just play alone. So if there's a full table, that's definitely a no-go for me. And if I can find a way to have less people, three or less, it starts going more towards a favorable condition for my style of play.
But some people have been complaining in some of these places they have trouble finding seats, and you have to, put your name on a list just to get a seat inside. And part of it, why aren't they opening more tables? But I guess they're having a hard time finding enough dealers. A lot of dealers don't want to go back to work because of the danger.
Yeah, that's true. I've actually have not experienced a time where I need to put my name on the list or wait. I've actually had relatively no trouble. Now, mind you, I do know when the busiest times are, and that's not when I've been to the casinos after COVID. So I kind of try to go when I know it's not going to be that crowded and, just far away.
You had a long losing streak, at least once.
Yep.
Did you learn any lessons for others from those losing streaks?
Yeah, definitely. I think in retrospect, a lot of the times that I was losing, I had the mindset of, I got to get this money back right now. And, sometimes you do have the mental ability, or if you're not being backed off, sure, by all means, keep playing. But a lot of times my mindset was like, I need to get this money back. And I think that was a wrong approach. Not only because I may start playing when I'm really tired, but it can also mess with your mind. And then, not that I've done this, but I've actually known other players where their emotions will get a hold of them. And then they'll start over betting in order to chase the loss. Or it could be a case of underbetting, like if now for this session, they've won a certain amount. Like now if I get a high count, I'm not going to put the money out there because I don't want to lose it right in this session. So I think the mentality of this session, quote unquote, I think it helps to get rid of that mentality. It's, you know, it's in the long run. So you don't have to get your money right back then, and you don't have to just keep grinding at that particular spot. You know, you can take a break, let your head cool off, and then move on. So that's one of the things I learned, you know, just relax, take a step back, and come back the next day. I think another good lesson I learned is if you think you're probably getting heat and somebody at the casino calls your name, don't respond. If they call either your alias or your real name, right? Like, hey, Mr. X, and you're like, yes, how may I help you? Like, wrong. Always, even if you're walking, this happened to me once when I was walking away and the pit called my name and I was playing unrated. But by that time, I had already learned my lesson. So I just kind of pretended like I was on my phone and I just got out of there. You know, it's things we sometimes don't think about where it'll help the casino confirm that indeed you are who they think you are and now you've confirmed it for them.
Yeah, they definitely will just look for your reaction. Yeah. Because sometimes they think they know who you are, but they're not sure. And that used to be back in the old days of the Griffin Agency where they would send Griffin agents to the casino to look at you. And if they weren't sure, they would page you under your real name.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to keep a straight face and not move when you hear somebody paging you under your real name.
Yep.
Yeah, how do you practice that? Because it always takes you as a surprise.
Yeah, well the first time it happens, you know, the first time it happens, you realize, you know, I shouldn't make that mistake again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so along with those lessons I learned in my losing streak, it was also to network. Right. Network will help you perhaps with doubts that you may have in whether you're playing the game correctly, whether perhaps the game you're playing is not as good as you think it is. Right. Have the tools like CVCX or a friend that you can run things by. Right. And then, I cannot emphasize how important networking is because you'll have that support. You'll have those lifelines to call or to phone a friend when you need to. And then, you know, they'll share information with you that is going to be helpful for you. I think that's definitely a lesson that I learned, to network and keep open communication with other APs. And not simply for the purpose of see what I can gain from them, but really to be there for each other. And if there's ways that you can help them, and if there's a favor that you can do for them, you know, do it. And if you do that and you get that reputation, like, people will respect you for it and they will share stuff with you, not because you're asking them, but because you're kind, because you're not being a jerk, right?
Do you use the Blackjack Apprenticeship as one of your sources for networking?
Yep, absolutely. As a matter of fact, most of the folks that I met, that I network with, I've met through the site, through a call-in site. Yep.
Good. Since they're one of our sponsors, that was definitely the right answer. Thank you very much. The fact that it's true is so much the better.
Yep. And then another theme that I see a lot in the forum is the frustration with losing, right? Losing streaks. I think what really helped me turn that corner is that those times when I have big hands out there, like, how can the dealer not bust? Like, you know, they have 16. How can they draw five? It's all that is already baked into the math, right? So I had to really drill that into my head. The fact that I'm going to lose big hands, the fact that the dealer is going to pull magic hands, that's all baked into the math. If I'm playing correctly, if I'm sticking to counting and putting my bet out there when appropriate, it's going to work out, right? So I've kind of gone from being really bitter when I lose to now just thinking of it as that's part of the game. You know, I'm going to lose those hands. Let's move quickly to the next hand so I can get some EV.
I found on video poker losing streaks, which are not the same as blackjack losing streaks, but they don't feel good. That for me, I go back and review my strategy cold. There are some games that I play, such as NSU Deuces Wild, that basically, with all the exceptions, not one person in 20,000 can play it perfectly. And yet, if I've been losing on that game, I go in and I review the exceptions and the and learn a couple more of them. And all the exceptions are listed in the winner's guide to that game. But I just verified that I'm not killing myself. One of the things about video poker is there are so many different games. And a player could easily be playing jacks or better at one place and double-double bonus at another place and deuces wild at another place and super aces bonus somewhere else. And they all have different strategies and they all have different exceptions. And so it's hard to be at 100% accuracy on all the games all the time. So the losing streaks are basically when I'm spending time extra learning because I want to know that I'm not killing myself.
Yep.
You mentioned that you play some slots now. Have you moved into other forms of advantage play as well, or is it just counting in some slots?
I've done a little bit of hole carding. I'm not actively scouting for more advantage plays on hole cards. So yeah, it's primarily card counting and some slots.
Have you ever had CTR problems where you have to cash out for more than 10,000 and provide ID?
So I have not encountered that problem. There was a time where I was playing at a Harris property, unrated, so as a refusal, and I was in for about 7,000, and they insisted that I should now do a CTR, but I suspected it was because they wanted my ID. So they really gave me a hassle. They told me they would not cash me the chips that I had remaining until I did a CTR. That was the only time that I remember it was really hassle. Other than that, if I'm reaching that threshold, I just leave. Or if I have that amount of chips that I'm going to cash, I never cash out more than 2,000 at a time from the cage. So that's another lesson, right? If you're at a casino, you don't need to cash all those chips at once. And if you do need to cash out as much as possible, what I've learned is there's a poker room typically. If they have that, I'll try and go and cash some of it there, some at the main cage. Some casinos have more than one cage. That's true in a lot of the Southern California casinos. And then the high limit slot room, I've known to also cash chips if you bring along a slot ticket with a couple of $100 in it. So these are, you know, some little tricks here and there that you learn in order not to be stubborn and walk up with $8,000 in chips to the cage and expect for them not to card you, right? That would be pretty unrealistic.
Well, also, if there are places that you're playing a lot, there's no reason not to just keep the chips and use them the next time you play.
Yep, exactly. That's another thing where I started realizing that if I want to stay under the radar, then it is in my best interest to keep the chips because I'm going to be back, you know, in a week or two or whatever the case may be. And that avoids the attention of, you know, so-and-so is buying in for 300 or 500 or whatever. Then now I kind of just take out the chips, preferably green chips, and I just start betting small. And then by the time they realize, very often, you know, I have already a couple of thousand in chips. They didn't even know where I got the chips to start off with because I never bought in, right? So that's another way to delay the attention.
How closely do you watch the pit when you show up at a casino?
That's the first thing I do. So if I know that there's a game that I'm interested in, before actually paying much attention to the game, I've learned over time that whoever's watching that pit is going to have a direct impact on my longevity. Again, is it a pit boss that kind of seems too uptight? He's going to be following all the rules by the book. He's going to probably be sweaty. Or a lot of times I've experienced that the older pit bosses or floor supervisors tend to be more uptight and more sweaty, whereas the younger ones who want to be cool and hip and, you know, crack jokes with you, they seem to be less attentive. Now, if the heat comes from the eye in the sky, then you kind of really have no choice. But I found over time that being aware of the pit and then sitting down accordingly, that really makes an impact, or at least it has in my case, to your longevity.
Are there any pitfalls you haven't talked about yet of mistakes card counters are make that you think you might have advice on?
Get tested out. I think Richard often says that when we think we're good at something, we're probably not as good as we think, right, until we're evaluated. So definitely get tested out, and that comes with networking, right? You can have somebody look that up to see if you're doing it well or not. And then just really remember that if you are playing a perfect game, you're doing it like you should, the losing streaks are going to be there, right? I really was bummed out when I had a losing streak. So the losing streak is baked into the map. If you're doing it correctly, you're going to come out of it. And then just make sure you don't overbet. If you overbet your bankroll, you know, I always tell people, know your risk of ruin. And if you're afraid you're going to lose that, you probably are going to lose it. So stop betting that much with your bankroll. And then the same thing goes for underbetting, right? There's times that we're tempted to say, oh, I just won 10,000. Like, I don't want to go home with less than that. So I'm going to start betting small, right? That's another pitfall that I've often seen in card counters.
How often do you rat hole or otherwise disguise your score?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. How often do you, like I said, rat hole, but put chips into your pocket?
Oh, I think you said raffle.
Surreptitiously.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do it as often as I can. If there are other people that are coming and going from the table and they have black chips, then I'll start rat holing a black chip here and there. But if not, at least a couple of green chips at a time by palming them, like kind of touching them, palming them, and then reaching in the pocket for my cell phone. And when I get my cell phone, I leave the chips there and take my cell phone out. Just little tricks like that. So yeah, whenever I have the opportunity, I always do that.
One thing that's important about that is there has to be a plausible story for the guy in the pit. You know, if there's $2,000 in chips missing all of a sudden, like, he has to be able to say to himself, this is how they disappeared, right? There were three different guys who left the table with black chips. I'll just assign, you know, $700 to each of them or whatever. So you can't be playing alone and rat hole chips and expect the guy to believe that they just disappeared.
Yep. So that's the key. When people come and go from the table, you know, that's when I take the opportunity to rat hole a couple of chips. Because, if you're playing alone, there's nowhere else those chips could have gone. Yep.
Yeah.
So now you're playing unrated. When you were playing rated, were you able to take advantage of some of the promotions that were out there? Or not?
I did. When I had a host assigned, obviously room and food, that was pretty convenient. But what I found is that I don't play rated anymore. But when I did, the offers kind of started to dry up over the couple of years that I did play rated. And they required a lot of play in order to get good offers. So that was another reason why I really stopped playing rated. They were good while they lasted, but they dried up. And plus, I don't have an interest to play for comps anymore, unless it's another type of play and not just card counting. So now for card counting, I really have no interest in playing rated.
Yeah, the comps have dried up. They can dry up because they've been drying up all over, or they can dry up because you're not such, they don't consider you as much of a ploppy as they used to.
Yeah, so certainly.
Probably both things were in effect there. All right, we are going to talk. We're going to have a brief commercial break. And afterwards, we're going to look at some of the questions from our mailbag and let Hit a Seven help us answer some of the questions. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That is more than anyone else has. Promotion in August is half-price Walmart cards. Earn and redeem $25 worth of slot club points, which is $8,333, and you'll get a $50 Walmart card. A limit of 10, must earn and redeem them in August. At predicted.org, it's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political happenings, mostly but not entirely in the United States. If you know who, if you have a strong feeling who's going to be the governor or senator from this state or that one, it is a chance for you to make some money. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. An additional membership, pro membership, is sold separately. You can either get it with or without the gold membership. Listeners can play 1,000 hands for free to try it out at videopoker.com/GWAE. This software gives correction on quite a few games that are not listed on Video Poker for Winners or several of the others. Both Quick Quads and Ultimate X are the major examples, but there are others where it gives you the correct strategy that you don't get anywhere else. All right. We are back talking to Hit A7. It was a fun interview, and we've done run out of questions for him. So, so I'm going to our mail. Before I do that, Hit A7, is video poker one of your things or not? Because that affects what questions we ask.
I only use it to do free play whenever I'm doing plays that that give me back free play. So I'm not an expert at all.
Uh-huh. So that affects some of the questions we ask. Okay, somebody wants to know how a young AP should invest into a 401k or other retirement plans. This guy is 25 years old, looking to retire by 35. Now, I'm not an expert on that, and I hire my own financial advisor in order to help me with those things. And there are a lot of financial advisors out there, and many are not very competent. I'm pleased with my guys, but don't know how to tell you to find your own. Richard or Hit, do you have anything to say on that area?
Well, I would just say that if you are filing sorry, my microphone was muted. So, again, I'm also not a tax professional, but I would say if you are filing as a professional gambler on a Schedule C, I believe that you can have a SEP IRA, a self-employed IRA.
Yes.
At least you used to be able to. And you can put a big chunk of your income into that. So, but as Bob says, you know, on these kind of things, hire a pro. Okay. Russell Fox might be a good choice.
Yes. Hit, do you have anything to add?
Well, two things. That's a pretty aggressive goal, but I've seen it done. So plan accordingly.
Okay. Someone wants to know, he's a very new listener and just wanted to know if there's anything about the game Ultimate Texas Hold'em that he should know about. He already knows how to make big raises on certain hands, and he knows about the 21 outs. Is there anything else that can help my game? Any tips on all the game would be very much appreciated. Richard.
There's information on the game in Exhibit CAA. James Grosjean has a new book coming out in the near future that covers five different carnival games, and Ultimate Texas Hold'em is one of them, but it's not out yet. So, you know, that's about all I can tell you about it. I mean, it's a complicated strategy, first of all. So it's not like somebody can just give you the crib notes in a minute.
Also, the Wizard of Odds has a simplified strategy. If there's a difference between what the Wizard of Odds said and James Grosjean said, well, then, yeah, go with James Grosjean. But the Wizard of Odds is pretty good if you're just starting out. So it sounds like our listener is still at a level where he could get significant advantage just from the Wizard of Odds level of detail.
I believe that Las Vegas Advisor or Huntington Press, they did have some strategy cards that James Grosjean had done. And one of the games for basic strategy, one of those games was Ultimate Texas Hold'em. So you could also check there.
Okay. Hit, you got anything?
Not on that one. Thank you.
Okay. Somebody else has a question on Mississippi Stud. He wants to play it because it's widely available where he lives. And according to one source he had, if he sees at least one card, he gets a 50% edge. So he wants to hold card. The question is he right about going after Mississippi Stud to start a whole carding career? Richard.
Yeah, same answer as last time. You know, it's in Exhibit CAA, new book coming out. That game is in the new book. Basic strategy on the cards. Yeah.
He wants to know if we have any rough figures for the fraction of dealers that flash a card, and once such a dealer is found, the fraction of rounds he might flash.
No, there are no figures like that. And, you know, that was one of those games that was too easy, so lots and lots of people started playing it and basically burned it out. So, you know, I mean, that's going to vary by location, and there's just no way to put numbers on those kinds of things.
Well, and what's also true is that different players are more adept at seeing hole cards than others.
Yes.
So some players, we had a young lady on a few weeks ago. We called her Wolfetta.
Actually, she's on I guess it would be a couple of weeks ago when this airs.
And she was very good at that. And since I've had LASIK surgery and then cataract surgery, and now I'm back to wearing glasses, the best my vision can get is probably 20/30, and I might never see a whole card again. So part of it is, how good are your eyes, and do you know how to do it?
The one thing I would say, Bob, is that
yes,
if the listener interested in hole carding looks for literature out there, there's some good illustrations out there and some books I've seen on how to train in order to be able to train your eye to see the hole cards.
And Do you remember the names of any of those books?
I actually do not. This was a while back ago when I was looking into hole carding. And the other anecdote that it's pretty funny is that the very first hole card that I saw, and this was during a session, it was so ridiculously open that I thought all hole card was going to be like that. Boy, was I wrong. That's still to date the best hole card I've seen in a blackjack pitch game. It was pretty much like 100% of the time the dealer showing the hole card. And I'm sad to say that it doesn't really exist anymore the way that I saw it that time.
So this next one is for Richard. Somebody wants to know, back when you worked at the Castaway, did you ever meet a bookmaker, Sonny Reitzner? If so, what was he like?
Sonny was famous back then. First of all, there were commercials all the time. The Castaways had what was called the hole-in-the-wall sportsbook. And it literally was just a counter with whiteboards behind it. And they had maybe 10 feet by 6 feet of space back there. Wow. So it was literally a hole in the wall. And they would put the numbers up on the whiteboards. And Sonny ran it. And I mean, I was not a sports bettor, but we ate in the same helps hall, you know, seemed like a nice enough guy. But I never really spent much time talking to him. We didn't have much in common since I wasn't into sports at all.
The next listener wants to know if you met Lem Banker, and was he well respected in the gambling world?
No, I never did. I think if Anthony Curtis knows him, maybe that's a question for him when he's on the show next.
Very good. All right. So we are we actually probably have time for a couple more. And this guy wants to bring his family in, and they want to play blackjack, but they're non-counters. And he wants to know what would be the best strategy for them. And the best thing I could tell him would be learn basic strategy as cold as you can and bet as small as you can because you're going to lose. Anything else?
Well, is he a counter or the whole family are just
He doesn't say about himself, but he says he wants to bring his family in. So I'm guessing he might be an AP, but his family definitely isn't.
Yeah, I would agree. Try to teach them basic strategy. Tell them to bet, to play as slowly as possible. Play at full tables. Take a lot of time. Enjoy the drinks, you know. But you're playing a negative game, so.
All right. Anything to add on that hit?
Yeah, basically just try to minimize the house edge and maybe get some free drinks and a meal.
And, Richard, at one time you were a magician. Has that helped you at being an AP?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that you learn about in magic is misdirection. So, you know, as a magician, you kind of force the person watching you to look at something in one direction while you're doing something in another direction. So the ideas behind misdirection are really important, and you learn about palming, which allows me to go south with chips very easily and naturally without people seeing it. I think both of those things helped me as an AP.
Yeah, we discussed these some earlier in the show when we were talking about rat-holing chips. And the better you are at misdirection, the better you would be at getting away with that.
Yeah, and as Hit A7 said, you know, when he goes to his pocket, he has a reason, right? He comes out with his cell phone. So you don't want your hand just going into your pocket and coming back out for no reason. So, yeah, have something to take out of your pocket, whether it's, you know, breath mints or your phone or whatever.
And the last question for today. Somebody says they're a brand new card counter. On the second session ever, found a dealer that is flashing the bottom card of a double deck game when she pulls the deck out of the automatic shuffle machines 100% of the time, $25 to $1,000. Is it possible to have somebody cut well enough to take advantage of that, and how much do you think you can bet to get away with it?
Well, the answer to the first question is yes, you can learn how to cut an exact number of cards. How much you can bet, it's going to depend completely on where it is and how they take action. You know, it's going to be a lot different if you're at the El Cortez than it was going to be if you are at the Venetian. So,
yes, I think it's possible one of the co-hosts of this show knows how to cut that well, cut cards that well. But Hit, do you have anything to mention on this?
Yeah, I would say if that is an opportunity, you have to practice a lot, right, in order to cut at the right place. But also with the post-COVID era, the casinos I've been to, I don't recall any one of them letting me cut. The dealer's actually cutting now, so that opportunity may be not available, at least for the time being.
But let's say you had the skills to do this. When you see the dealer cut, and you can say, well, that dealer cut at 37 cards, so blah, 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 can you take advantage of it that way?
Yes, of course. Any time that you have knowledge of a card in a specific location, pretty much at any game, that is a big edge.
Yeah, that's true. For instance, the times that I've seen it, that I have seen the bottom card of a double deck, and if I'm not cutting, I would try to influence the dealer to say, you know, cut thin at the top, and now you know that card is out of play, so your running is a one. Your running count is a one before you even start the game.
Right, which really isn't worth much of anything. Correct. In a six-deck game. But
yeah. You're using it to some advantage.
Yeah,
we did say double-deck game.
Double-deck, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's better out than in, that's for sure.
Is it better to be cut out of play than it is to know where it is? It's going to be the 45th card?
No, it's much better to know it's going to be the 45th card. Because then you can try to steer it as one of the dealer's cards.
And you need to practice keeping a running count of the number of cards played as well as the various other counts you're doing.
Well, I wouldn't bother counting cards if I had a game where I can cut the bottom card.
Uh-huh. Good. All right.
People who do that stuff, that's like you're walking down the street picking up $20 bills and there's a guy saying, wait a minute, but there are pennies next to it. Pick up those too. You know, I'm just going to stick with the 20s at that point.
That was one of my problems when I played. I wanted those damn pennies and got all confused. Very good. So we like to do the recommended at the end of the show. Unfortunately, I do not have any recommended this week. Richard, have you come up with any?
No, we just recorded two shows in a row, and I blew my wad on the last episode, so I don't have anything else.
Uh-huh.
But Hit Ace 7 recommended a restaurant last time. Maybe he's got another one he wants to recommend.
Sure, there's a good taco place that is called El Segundo Sol. It's right there off of Fashion Drive, kind of in front of the Wynn.
Huh.
They make a very good tableside guac and handmade tortillas.
You know, actually, I have not tried it, but I have been told that the best tacos in town are on a truck that is parked just north of the freeway on Las Vegas Boulevard, down, past Fremont Street downtown. So one of these days, you go there at night and there are big long lines of people trying to get tacos. So one of these days I'll try it. I can't really recommend it because I haven't eaten there. So
I'll have to try it for sure. I'll let you know if I try it first.
Okay.
Is actually that's one of your side jobs, isn't it? Hit.
Yeah.
Don't you sometimes make tacos?
That's right. Taco Man catering business with me and my parents. So yeah,
what?
That's
man, you got way too many jobs.
We like the hustle, man.
Yeah.
We thank you very much for being here the last 2 weeks. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.